Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Good to be with you this day. We've got great conversations ahead of us. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program and for all that they do to help us keep telling the good news of Jesus Christ here at Worldwide KFUO. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website, kfuo.org. You can look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. And we'll hear from President Ferry in just a little while. Right around 10:30, we'll hear from him. We have a special greeting from President Ferry at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and Concordia University Ann Arbor. So we'll hear from him later on in the program. You know, speaking of celebrating 90 years, we are celebrating during 90 days. We started back in November, going through the end of January to celebrate all that God has done and is doing through Worldwide KFUO to bring the good news of Jesus Christ around the world. Monday, December 15th, you are invited to join us for our open house, starting with a chapel service at 10 a.m. with Reverend Dr. Matthew Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And there will also be a short reception afterward and an opportunity to tour the studios and check out some of our history items on display in the lobby of the International Center here in St. Louis, Missouri. So hope you can join us for that. If you can't come for the chapel service, you can come anytime during the day up until 4 p.m. to visit the studios and check out our display in the lobby. And you can do that. We're located at 1333 South Kirkwood Road in St. Louis. You can find out more on our website, kfuo.org. And look for the events section, Celebrating 90 Years. You can find that there. Or you can go to facebook.com/KFUO radio and get more information there as well. Hope you can join us for that celebration on Monday. Now, if you're not in the St. Louis area, we will be broadcasting live the chapel service on Monday. We'll be broadcasting that during the 10 o'clock hour during Faith and Family. So you can join us via the web. You can listen to that chapel service that way as well. Well, it is time to talk with our first guest. Joining us by phone this morning, Derek Felder. He's Marketing and Development Director with Lutheran Social Services of Nevada. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us today and spend some time talking about Lutheran Social Services of Nevada. Tell us a little bit about, tell us about yourself and how you came to Lutheran Social Services of Nevada.
Yes, I first started a nonprofit in 2003 with a local nonprofit here named Goodwill. And after kind of plateauing there, I was seeking to really get in touch with clients more face-to-face. And the opportunity arose at Lutheran Social Services of Nevada. And I came over and basically took over the supportive housing program we had at the time. And it just kind of expanded into our food pantry services and our employment center and our birth certificate and ID programs as well. And it's one, I really enjoy the work that I'm doing. And we have a very dedicated staff as well that makes it real easy to get along.
Well, give us a little bit of background, some history on Lutheran Social Services of Nevada. How did it come to be and how has it changed over the years?
Lutheran Social Services really started off as a small little service provided by one of our local Lutheran churches here, Reformation Lutheran Church, and it was a clothing closet, and it provided clothes to those that came that were in need. And eventually, as the need increased in the valley, they started beginning to give out food and other services, and we continued to grow to the point where we can provide rental and utility assistance and the birth certificate and IDs, and a food pantry now that really is just like a little small supermarket versus giving out a box of food. Our clients can actually come through and shop for themselves.
Very good. And so it's been around. It started off as a small little organization. Now, how has the Lutheran Social Services grown and expanded, and how does it meet the needs of the community? What are the needs of the community that it's able to meet today?
Yes, and we grew from that little small closet, that clothing closet, to having our building that we lease right now. And that building is over 17,000 square feet. And we are able to provide a myriad of services now to the point of basically addressing the needs of the community, which is their food insecurity, which we find there are a lot of food deserts here in Nevada, in the Las Vegas area. And we try to reach out to those areas and bring food to those individuals to help them out, the ones that cannot come to us. And we also realized that one of the needs is people don't want to be dependent on our food pantry. They want to actually be able to purchase their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've established in this this year, in August, we launched our Empowerment Center, which is basically an employment center to help people get back on their feet, get back into the workforce, so they can provide and have that dignity and that self-esteem restored to them.
So helping people get on their feet and to be self-sufficient, or at least to be interdependent and helping care for one another and to be contributing to their community as well.
Yes. And we find that the ones that we serve, every client that comes through the door, they have a story.
Sure.
And we sit down and we assess them and try to find out where can we help, what's the best thing that we can do within our power here to help them out. And we find that someone may come in just for food, but they may need a birth certificate or a Nevada ID to be able to get a job or receive other services. And so once they start to tell you their story, it really opens up to what else we can provide them.
Let's take a look at some of the services. I understand that there are quite a few services that Lutheran Social Services of Nevada offers. Let's take a look at each of these. You mentioned the Empowerment Center now open. What does the Empowerment Center focus on?
Okay, the Empowerment Center really focuses on trying to get people back into the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And with our current unemployment rate being at 6.8%, we still see the need every day when people line up at our doors for food assistance or rental assistance. And so when we assess these clients that come through, we find out what skills they have, if they have any, and then how can we get them a new skill to basically fit the job market that's available today. And so we will actually pay for any work certificates that they may need, be it a food handler's card, a guard card, things along that line, to help them get back into, make them more employable, basically. And along with that service comes the rental utility assistance, because while they're hunting for a job or they're looking for a job, they need that security that they're not going to be homeless mm-hmm. while out there searching. And we also provide the financial counseling, which they learn how to budget and save their money and, prepare for, basically a rainy day.
How does that help by offering that service, that support to individuals who are looking for gainful employment? How, by helping those, does it help the whole community?
Oh, it strengthens our community, and it really helps our retailers have more money to be able to offer more jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a cycle that the more people we can employ, the more income we can bring back into the community. And that also cuts down on the amount of services people may need, so others can get in there and get some services as well.
So it really kind of generates some activity and movement and in the economy, in the community as well.
Oh, yes. It really gives us a big boost
mm-hmm.
Because in the last couple of years, our unemployment rate was, 7.1 and higher. And so now it's starting to become, a little bit more manageable, but we still see that need that comes in. And we love seeing our clients month to month when they come to food pantry, but we'd love to see them actually have a job to be able to provide for themselves as well.
Sure. Well, let's talk about some of the other programs at Lutheran Social Services of Nevada. What are some of the other programs that are offered through LSSN?
Okay, our other program, one of our programs we're really proud of, we started this year back in March, is our Nutrition Education Program. And this program, we actually had a private donor that supported this program, and we built a kitchen, an actual low-income kitchen, in our facility here. And the kitchen is designed basically to be a real intimate, maybe 8 clients at a time, come in and learn how to prepare food.
Mm.
And this is food based on what they would be able to pick up at, local food pantries and also at their local grocery store. And it gives them little tips here and there on how to prepare and how to store and basically stretch food and how to be, one, real conscious of what they're purchasing or what they're picking out.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some people that may have some dietary restrictions. Like myself, I have high blood pressure, so I have to watch, you know, my dietary intake really close. And this is what the nutrition education program provides, is, you know, those type of educational components where someone can come in and sit down and learn how to make, you know, a very low-sodium meal, or something that a diabetic person might be able to eat, you know, without having any, you know, adverse reactions.
Sure, sure. And so the Nutrition Education Kitchen, is that like a hands-on experience where they get to see? How do they go about, how do they learn these things? Is it through a class? How does one learn about nutrition in this nutrition education program?
Yes, and we provide this on every pantry day, so it's like Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. They come in and they're kind of like a Costco where you get to sample what's prepared. And if they're interested, they can sign up for a class that goes later that afternoon. And they can come in, and the best thing about these classes is very hands-on. And it's, like I said, small classes, 8 to 10 people. And so it's not stadium seating where you can't see or ask a question. They're really up close with the person that's providing, you know, the demonstration. And we find that it's really easy for people to learn when they're actually doing hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they enjoy, right, you know, having that interaction. And one of the advantages as well is we have what we call a mommy and me class as well. So single mothers or single fathers can also come in and learn how to prepare meals with their children. Say if it's just after school, you know, they can learn how to make quick little snacks to, you know, hold the children off until dinner time.
I think that the hands-on part, as you pointed out, is very engaging, and we're more likely to follow through with the things that we learn. We're more likely to retain those when we have a hands-on experience like that. Certainly, you can learn nutrition from reading a book or watching a video or listening to something, but by having that hands-on experience, I think someone is more likely to carry it with them, carry that experience, that learning home with them, and into their kitchen, into the grocery store, or wherever they're, you know, wherever they need to make those healthy choices.
Yes, and the best part is they get to take the recipes home. If they really love the recipe, they get to take that home. And not only that, but we provide everything that they learned to cook that day, they can take home food-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the food prepared for them in bags so they can go home and prepare that recipe for their family in the future if they like it.
So nutrition education is another important program through Lutheran Social Services of Nevada. Other programs, any other programs that you want to take a look at? It looks like you have a long list of programs.
Yes. Our birth certificate and ID program, which we kind of talked a little bit about, but what we find is a lot of people that come for our services may not have IDs, or they need an ID to be able to receive employment or medical benefits. And so through a couple of federal grants and also private grants, we were able to establish a program where we would actually, you know, do the hunting and do the searching for a person's birth certificate to be able to get them a Nevada ID. And this opens the door, you know, to many services for clients that have been on the street for many years. And it's very instrumental in, you know, building their self-esteem. I call it getting them back on the grid, because without an ID, you know, nobody knows you out there.
Mm-hmm.
And once we provide, you know, that basic services, you can kind of see their eyes kind of light up, because now, you know, they can identify themselves. They can go out and, you know, get an apartment or, you know, obtain employment. So it's that real first step in getting someone, you know, the long-lasting services that they need.
Sure, that could be a huge hurdle to getting services that you need in order to be healthy, to have, you know, to make things, keep things stable at home, in order to even to get a job. All those things that can be a huge hurdle, and we don't realize, you know, how difficult it can be to go through that process. Having someone to help you through that process is certainly valuable.
Oh, yes. And one of our biggest programs, and I have to say a lot of people know us for this program, it is our food pantry. And like I mentioned before, we're not a food pantry where we box up items and hand them out. Our clients actually come in and they get a shopping cart and they're able to go up and down the aisles and select food that they know they're going to prepare. And this is amazing because we've learned that doing this, we reduced waste by 41%. And this is, you know, really substantial because when you box up items and you give them to individuals, there may be items in that box that a person may not eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're more likely to either throw it away or not use it altogether. And so with our pantry, we hope people pick up, you know, basically what they can prepare, what they like. And it ranges from dairy to meat to produce to canned goods and dry goods. And some of our local vendors here have really chipped in and, you know, helped keep our freezers stocked and our refrigerator stocked as well.
Hmm. So all of these things are great services to help people get on their feet, stay on their feet, and to be healthy, and really to help families do what they're meant to do and to thrive at it.
Yes, yes. And just to give you an idea of, you know, how our services go, last year we served over 15,000 people, and that's through all the services that we provide. And this is operating with a staff of 9 and about 8 to 10 consistent volunteers.
Wow.
And so it's one, it's tiring, but, you know, it's very rewarding when we can see someone walk out of here, you know, knowing that they were able to drop a little bit out of their pack, so their load is a little bit lighter.
Are there any stories that from those you've served, are there any stories that really are a shining example that really help us understand how valuable and important these services of Lutheran Social Services is?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, the one that really comes to mind, and I had a chance to personally work with this client, Ms. Allen, and she's a single mother of 4 that came to us seeking shelter assistance. And she didn't have her children with her. Her children were with CPS because she had become homeless, and so they had to remove the children from her care. We were able to work to get her into an apartment, and basically we did a lot of intensive case management, helping her understand, you know, the value of what money she gets, you know, monthly, how to stretch that, how to save that, and also basically get those life skills back because she was homeless for 3 years. And so this was a kind of a rebirth for her. And after 4 months, CPS, Child Protective Services, were able to reunite her in her apartment with her children. And it was a wonderful time to be able to see the tears come down her eyes as, you know, they signed the final paperwork for her to have her children. And she continued to job search, and she ended up getting a job at the United States Postal Service. And so it's one of those stories that, you know, you see someone come in, and they're really at the end of their rope. They tried everything, and they just need a little assistance, a little guidance. And we were able just to give her that little spark of hope and changed it from where she was homeless without her children to now she has her own apartment with a job and she's providing. And just recently she came in to write us a note to thank us for the work we did with her. And it's, like I said, very rewarding. It kind of gives us a warm fuzzy just to know we changed someone's life.
Mm. I'm sure it is rewarding to hear and to see when the work that you're doing makes a difference in someone's life.
Yes, it's one where we constantly let our volunteers know that a client may not say thank you, but their thank you is in the smile as they receive those services, as they're walking out knowing that, you know, they have food that can last them, you know, the next 4 or 5 days. Or, you know, knowing that their rent is paid for, or they're able to get that birth certificate and ID. And so those thank yous, they are in abundance. And we really appreciate people, you know, helping us out in the manner of donating, you know, their volunteer hours, their food donations, and also the monetary donations, because that helps us keep the doors open and provide those services as well.
That was my next question. What are the needs of Lutheran Social Services of Nevada? What are the needs to help carry out that work? How can listeners find out more and also support the work of LSSN?
Okay. And we do have our website. It's www.lssnv.org, where we pretty much put out what we're looking for food donation-wise, because our food pantry, we distributed last fiscal year over 500,000 pounds of food. And so our goal is really this fiscal year coming is to exceed 1 million pounds of food back into the community to people in need. And we also need the monetary donations because even though we receive the tangible food items, our purchasing power as a nonprofit is a little stronger than the average shopper, where a person may spend a dollar on a one canned good. We can take that dollar and buy 9 of those cans and spread it out to 9 families. And so the monetary donations can go a lot further versus the actual tangible items.
Well, very good. So you can find out more at lssnv.org to find out how you can support the work of Lutheran Social Services of Nevada. I have enjoyed our conversation, and I'm certain our listeners have as well. And always great to learn more about those who are partnering with the church to provide for the communities and help bring this mercy and love of Christ to our neighbors.
And thank you. Thank you for having me on, and we really appreciate the chance to actually spread what we do.
Thank you, Derek Felder, Marketing and Development Director, Lutheran Social Services of Nevada. Thanks for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Okay, thank you.
Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to talk with Dr. Jack Vians, clinical psychologist. You've seen him on, you've seen these little dolls, little creatures that come out this time of year, Elf on the Shelf and other things that have become family traditions this time of year. And so stick around. We're going to talk with Dr. Jack Vians, the pros, the cons, the good, the bad, the ugly, when it comes to these types of traditions. Are they helpful? Are they hurtful? Indifferent? So stick around for that. And also some Christmas greetings from President Ferry at Concordia University, Wisconsin, right here on Faith and Family, coming up next after this break.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Pro-abortion activists have good reason to fear results of the midterm election, and Representative-elect Molly White from Texas is one of them. Molly had 2 abortions in her 20s and suffered greatly as a result. It took the family decades to heal, and she became very hard-hearted. She had 2 stillborn babies and had difficulty bonding with her son and daughter. She's gone through healing and is now a firm Christian who isn't afraid to speak out in Congress to protect women and their babies. Pro-abortion members of Congress won't know what to do with the unsinkable Molly White or how to respond to her testimony. Mothers and fathers who've chosen abortion are often our best ambassadors for Christ and the babies. Let's pray for Congresswoman Molly White as she begins her term in Congress.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
This is a newly born radio station, KFUO.
Those were the first words spoken on KFUO. But before those words could even be broadcast, it took a group of volunteers and supporters to cover the cost of constructing our very first radio facility.
On this occasion, we also wish to express our hearty thanks to all Christians who have given or pledged their contributions toward the erection and upkeep of this station.
Since those historic words, KFUO has relied on supporters to bring us through our first 90 years. And KFUO continues to need your support to move forward into our next. Will you prayerfully consider supporting the worldwide outreach of KFUO with a gift today? For a suggested gift of $90 or more, we'll say thank you with a collector's edition 90th anniversary I Lutheran t-shirt. To give your gift, contact Joni or Mary at 314-996-1512. Thank you for your continued support and prayers for worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news. This is a test of the emergency alert system. This has been a test of the emergency alert system.
As a synod, we walk together in all we do, whether it is to bring mercy to others or to plant new churches. This month, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is highlighting our many partners in the gospel that include districts, congregations, auxiliaries, seminaries, schools, and recognized service organizations. Find resources at lcms.org/themes/December.
Two pastors, one an Italian wise guy, and the other a Ukrainian academic. What happens when you put them in the same room with no script and a bunch of sound effects? Well, you're just going to have to tune in to find out. The God Whisperers on Worldwide KFUO, Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. Central. They're fun-loving, a little off the wall, but always solidly Lutheran. You will learn something every time or double your money back. It's okay to enjoy being Lutheran.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is good to be with you this day, this Wednesday, December 5th. We're going to talk with Dr. Jack Fiennes here in just a little bit about some Christmas traditions, Elf on the Shelf, and some other things. Are they helpful? We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. I want to share with you some Christmas greetings from President Pat Ferry and his wife, Tammy Ferry, from Concordia University, Wisconsin.
Hello, everyone, and Merry Christmas.
We're heading into one of our family's favorite times of the year. And Pat and I want to take a moment to wish our Concordia family a very Merry Christmas from our home to yours.
There's nothing like this time of year on a college campus. The students and the faculty are busy with final exams. They're wrapping up the fall semester. And they're also inspiring our communities to celebrate the true meaning of the season as a part of Christmas at Concordia in Wisconsin and the Boar's Head Christmas Festival in Ann Arbor. Residence halls, dining halls are all decked out. And students are trying to figure out how to get all that luggage and all that laundry home for the holiday break.
We're so proud of our students. This time of the year also finds Concordians giving back through service in our communities. But Concordia students shine not just at this time of year, but all year through as they live out our mission of service and leadership in the church and the world. All of us connected by Concordia share a joy for giving in humble response to the gift of our Savior.
It's been another remarkable year at Concordia, and we're blessed beyond all measure by record enrollment, purposeful growth, and increased opportunities to extend our mission in new ways. Our faculty, staff, and students are thankful for the prayers and the support that you've given. Your help moves Concordia forward, equipping students to lead lives of faith and purpose and service and leadership. For our family, Christmas is a time to reflect on the redemption that is ours through the gift of the Savior. It's also a time to give back in joyful response for that gift of grace and life. And we pray that God blesses your family with all of his good gifts, and that you're led to serve him in new ways, big and small, in your congregations and in your communities this year.
So Merry Christmas, everyone. From the two of us and the 8,990 students of Concordia University,
we wish you a blessed and joyous Christmas season.
And a truly wonderful new year. God bless.
Great to hear from President Ferry and his wife, Tammy, and their Christmas greetings. And we're grateful for the partnership of Concordia University, Wisconsin, and all the great work they're doing there. Well, joining us by phone this morning, we have Dr. Jack Fiennes, clinical psychologist, ready to talk about some elves. Good morning, Dr. Fiennes.
I'm ready to talk about elves. Yeah, I got elves all over the place. They're crawling out of the woods, crawling in my windows, crawling everywhere. What's going on?
Hey, what do you What do you get when an elf uses his cell phone to take a picture?
I don't know, but I have an elfie.
An elfie, very good.
Usually they arrest those guys, don't they, or something like that? Isn't that sort of like those federal crimes these days or something like that? I don't know. But now the it's sort of interesting, our society, I mean, that's why I like to study our society or people or cross-cultural stuff or anthropological stuff. You know, we can take a perfectly good idea and turn it rotten real quick. I mean, it's been going on since that old apple tree in the Garden of Eden where they have a perfectly good environment and go out for a fruit salad and all kinds of hell breaks loose. Do you have an elf on the shelf there at KFUO?
We don't have an elf, maybe some dust bunnies, but no elves around here.
If you have an elf on the shelf, send it packing, anyway. No, what's happening, let me tell you something, across the United States and across, I guess, a lot of Western civilization, we got these elves on the shelf that came really, really big about 6 years ago, maybe more. And it started as a slightly harmless, I guess, innocent, innocuous kind of thing. Oh, you little elf sitting up there. And, you know, the manufacturer and the card manufacturers made all kinds of money on these things. And, yeah, it was sort of cute, and the elf shows up in a particular and peculiar place day to day. But then a strange thing happened. All of a sudden, the elves, instead of being like cute little impish things showing up in roasters and, you know, and in the dry cleaning and all that kind of stuff, and TV tops, they ended up being asking questions about how good you've been that day. And it sort of had a glimpse, like the elf was a self-reporting agent of Santa Claus. So instead of like an elf being there sort of cute and impish, the elf was a member of like the CIA or Secret Service of Santa and was telling Santa how good you've been that day. And basically, if you don't perform well, then, or don't behave well in school or with the family, then Santa's going to ding you when it comes to Christmas presents. And then what happens is Christmas, instead of walking toward the manger scene, we're walking toward the behavioral control unit, you know. I've gained clients from nervous kids, anxious kids, because the elf is reporting on them every day. And that's really, really sort of bizarre that a stuffed elf can cause a child who's age 7 to have anxiety attacks when he comes home from school because he's got to tell somebody that he didn't think well of his neighbor. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it is bizarre, okay? And the funny thing is, it is so diametrically different than the Christmas message. I'm teaching a 9-week course at Our Savior's in Springfield called The Fullness of Time and focusing on the Nativity. And a couple of weeks ago, I took the people through a pretty rigorous look at Luke 2, the Greek in particular, with the angels and that. And then we're going to the Magi and stuff in Matthew 1. And if you look at the message of the angels, okay, who, by the way, were only 4 inches above the shepherd's head. The Teste is the Greek. So they weren't like, it's not angels we have heard on high, it should be angels we have heard on low. You know, they're pretty low there, you know. But they use the word kaira, which means joy, okay? Great joy. In fact, some of the command to be joyful. And if you take a look at the Magi, they had great joy when they saw the child, okay? The word joy is all over the place, and the word do not be afraid, do not be fearful. You know, it's all over the place in the nativity scene, okay? And yet we have this elf, this American elf that's doing nothing but creating fear, and what we call in my business, fear of failure, that if I'm not a good enough kid, if I fail somehow in my life as a child, then Santa Claus is not going to like me, and oh my goodness sakes, you know? And so I don't know, you take a look at those two stories, and they don't match up, okay? So, yeah, we take them to Advent services tonight, and the kids are supposed to have great joy and great love and great peace and great happiness and be worshipful and not be fearful. And the elf comes back and says at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, you haven't been a good boy enough. Santa doesn't like it anymore. And I don't know. Does that make sense to you?
Well, just the whole idea. I understand the good intentions behind the elf on the shelf idea that it could be something fun and playful. But at the same time, I'm a little creeped out by it. And,
well,
a little creeped by this mysterious creature that keeps moving around the home. Nobody ever sees him moving or her moving, but they move around the home and keeping an eye on what you're doing, and then they somehow provide a report on what I've been doing lately, that they mysteriously know everything that I'm doing. That's a little creepy to me.
Well, I tell you what, I think the exact resolution is too. There's a real resolution I'll talk about in a second, but the priority, but there's some sort of cute resolution happened. One of the elf went to the deep freeze one time. The kid said, heck with it, you know, put the elf in the deep freeze. They didn't fight him till June, you know. so he didn't get to report very much. Another elf got mulched. The kid, the dad was mowing one last time out there in a southern state, and the elf went flying in the air. Dad rolled right over with a lawnmower.
Oh, no.
And so that was the end of that elf. So another elf, one elf got mailed back to Santa Claus. The kid took a box, duct taped it, put Santa Claus, dropped it off in the mailbox. And the post office, of course, you know, mail goes to Santa. It was the elf. So I don't know. But there's another thing going on, okay? There's a project out there called Kindness Elves, okay? And quite frankly, there's a website, kindnesselves.com or something like that. And I think I sent it to the website a couple weeks ago. And these are elves, and all they're supposed to do is, and there's also a group called Peace Builder Elves. And what they do is they have people, the kids when they come home, that tell them something joyful of the day, something that they did that was fun, something they did to help other people, something that they did to build somebody's spirits up, and maybe some suggestions like, maybe let's make some cookies for the next door neighbor kids. Maybe let's go visit an elderly couple. Maybe let's sing some songs to some relatives of ours. You know, that type of thing. And then enjoy, and maybe in the morning, I know a lot of people with their little elves, now even the elf on the shelf, they don't want to waste the time they spent with it. Maybe they use that same elf, and in the morning, that elf tells a child something joyful of the Christmas season, something to be... Something not to be fear of failure, because the thing you gotta realize about humans, and we're all humans, okay? We all are trenchantly addicted to fear of failure. And fear of failure means I it's a guilt thing, okay? And that's obviously what the message of Christmas is about, is getting rid of guilt. It's about going to Jesus taking our guilt. And the point is, we love to be guilty. We love to focus on what's not right, how we miss the mark. And this elf, the elf as we've seen it so far, teaches these kids fear of failure rather than joy. And I want an elf, I don't care what elf you have, even the old elf, just teach your child joy. I mean, how many nativity sets could you sell if Mary and Joseph and the angels look sad? You know what I mean? How many wise men could you sell if they look sad when they got to the manger scene? They don't. They look reverent. They look joyful. We talk about live nativity scenes, like we're going to have one of our Saviors, and people are happy. And that's what the elf should do. It should be a happiness propagator, not a fear propagator.
I would think as a parent, we certainly want to encourage good behavior. We want to encourage our children to make choices that are good for them and for their neighbor. How do we do that? We certainly don't want to moralize the scriptures. We certainly don't want to moralize the gospel, I should say. How do we do that? What do you think about these customs to incentivize good behavior?
Well, I think that it's real simple. Okay. I think you ask, it's real simple. I think you ask your child, you know, what is the biggest problem you have bothering you, okay? And, you know, and everybody's got a problem. I mean, maybe they didn't didn't play enough time with their toys. Maybe they had an argument at school. Maybe somebody stole their toys. So everybody's got something, okay? And then you say, how would you like that problem removed? How would you like that problem removed? And then they'll say, wow, you know, most kids could say, I would love it. And then you say, that's what the message of Jesus is. Jesus arriving for us took our problems away from us. He took all the things that you're freed up now. Now you say, okay, now it's good, I hate to use the word disciples, but as good followers of him, we're supposed to spread that news that he did that for us to other people. In fact, if you look, the first thing the angels said to the, I jokingly say that the angels and the shepherds were the first evangelists, because that's the first time you see that word used in Luke and then in the New Testament. How do we then tell others about how Jesus can do it, did it for us? And then the basis of doing things for other people from the kids is not because they're trying to be good to somebody else, which is fine, but you're trying to give other people the good news of Jesus through not only telling about Jesus, but through their actions. And what did Jesus do? He healed the sick. He helped the lame. He forgave sins. He told the gospel. He helped people out in their days of trouble. So find somebody in your life. Find somebody else that's suffering somehow. Maybe he's lost a dad or a mom. Maybe doesn't have a lot of things. And try to give that love of Jesus to them. That's the basis of it, okay? It's not to try to be based just essentially moralistic or to be, you know, good for good's sake, but to be good, not be good, but to spread that word. What did the angels say to the disciples? We have good news to you and all people. Today is born Jesus in Bethlehem. Now go share that news to other people. And what did the shepherds do? They all went running, okay? And we need to get our kids running, not away from the elf on the shelf, okay, to try to be good, but running to help other people. And I tell you something, kids like to help other people. Kids like to get involved and do some things. It's just that we want to do it away from fear and away from basic morality, just basically because it's been good. You know, what God has done for you, do with others. You follow me on that?
So the motivation starts with what God has done for us. That's where the motivation is for us to do good, to serve our neighbor, to love our neighbor.
Yes, even the Magi said that. When, you know, we have seen his star in the east, right? Remember? I mean, they're not just on this trek because they think it's a thing to do because, hey, it's a thing to do. They're professors of, metaphysics. They're doing it because they know the promise. They know the messianic prophecies. Daniel, you know, told them about a long time ago. These guys are, and they're doing it because of him. And so they're bringing gifts. Those are, I guess you want to call them good works. They're bringing gifts to him because of him, okay, because of what he is supposed to do. They're not bringing gifts because they're good old guys from Persia, you know, or wherever they're from. They're doing it because of what he is letting them know about themselves, and they bow down and worship him. So what we do is we follow his lead. And by following his lead, what he's done for us, that leads us to other people, okay? His star is still up there. I mean, his star is literally still up there ready to guide us every day. It has to guide us away from fear and away from ourselves and away from self-doubt and away from, you know, trying to be good and toward helping other people just like he helped us. That's what the star is for. That's what the manger scene is for.
So start with the incentive rather than waiting for there to be good behavior and have a mysterious character wandering around your home to frighten you into to good behavior.
My friend, I hate to get deep here, but it all starts with a thing that a bunch of us guys in Illinois did a lot of research on motivational theory, and it all starts intrinsically. You know, it all starts intrinsically. It starts, as you said, in the incentive. People always get it all backwards. It's like, okay, if he does something good, I'm going to reinforce it. So do something good and the elf will like you. Do, you know, look at something good and then that will be reinforce it. And that'll give, that's a moralistic model. You know, somebody did something good for me, so I'm going to do something good for him. You know, kind of, and that's okay from a good golden rule standpoint. But when you're talking about the gospel, you're talking about gospel-based good behavior. And that's where I'm headed. More gospel-based good behavior than elf-based good behavior, okay? And if gospel-based good behavior is there, it's because of the incentive is the drive. It is not the reinforcer. The incentive is the driver. And so, like these elves, that are the kindness elves that are out there and the peace-builder elves, you don't make peace for somebody because somebody else has given you peace. You don't do it because you want to be good for Santa Claus or whatever, okay? You do it because peaceful behavior is good to share with other people, because what did the angels say? What did the angels say to the shepherds? They said, we bring you what? Peace. to all people, okay? Then share the peace to people, okay? It's not just shaking hands with people in church. It's walking around life peaceably and making everybody else's life as peaceful as possible. And I would bet that if every kid that is the son or daughter of a parent of this broadcast tries to make peace with someone at school tomorrow or next week, there'll be a whole lot happier school days. And if everybody in the family tries to make peace with Aunt Edna and Grandma Jones and Uncle George when they get together over that Christmas ham or turkey next couple weeks from now, I think there'll be a lot more peaceable families. And if people are peaceful in malls, we'll have a different motive. And the motive will not be based on trying to behaving good, but because the angel said there's peace from God, and I'll share that peace.
Hmm.
It's a whole different bend, okay?
Sure.
The epoch has changed. We don't do things because, we do things with God's grace, within that grace of God. It's a different blend, okay? And that's what took everybody by surprise Christmas night in Bethlehem and also with the Magi later, because all of a sudden, all of our rationales and all of our motives for behavior are gone, okay? It's always got to be based on those what the angels have said about the nativity message, the gospel. We always use the word gospel, but I like the word evangelism, evangelium, the fact that the good news has come. And that good news did not come with a creepy little elf sitting on a shelf.
So is there any way to, in your opinion, are there things you could do with either the elf on the shelf or something else this time of year that families can do just for fun or that might motivate us in the right way?
Yeah, I think why don't you have the elf sit down with the child and read a few messianic prophecies? I mean, don't use that term, messianic prophecies, but have the elf and the child talk about Isaiah 9:6. What does that mean? Okay. Have the elf on the shelf read Isaiah 7. Have the elf on the shelf and talk about Luke 2. How does that change our behavior? And then have the elf suggest you share that message with other people, not only in words, but in your behavior. How excited, I asked the class last week. Okay, take a look at the shepherds. And by the way, there weren't just two or three shepherds. There's a lot, I talked to Paul Meyer last week. There's a lot of evidence that field was owned by the temple in Jerusalem, and there were probably several thousand sheep up there and probably a couple hundred shepherds, okay? That probably wasn't just four or five shepherds up there, okay? These were official sheep. And so you probably had an onrush of a lot of the shepherds. But look how excited the shepherds were when they came. Ask yourself the question the elf can ask you. How are you excited about the Christmas season? Not about getting gifts, but how excited are you to tell others about Jesus? How excited are you to make others feel peaceful at Christmas, to build other people up, build their comfort up at Christmas, okay? And that's the thing you want to message. Have that elf get you excited about being good at Christmas time. Not good, but can be good. But go visit kids in the Cardinal Glennon Hospital. Maybe make cards for those kids. Maybe take candy cookies for the kids. Maybe, do things with people that don't have what they can have at the season and make and build them up just like the angels built those shepherds up and just like the Magi came and built everybody up.
So there are ways that we can do things for our neighbor that can become family traditions, family customs this time of year or any time of year, really. There are things that we can do as a family that can become family traditions and also give us opportunities to create memories as well.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. When was the last time you talked about neighbors, okay? I want everybody out there in radio land to ask this question. When was the last time you walked over next door to your neighbor, knocked on the door and said, by the way, Merry Christmas, here's a few donuts, okay? Or Merry Christmas, I've cooked up some hot chocolate, how would you like some? Or knocked on the next neighbor and said, Merry Christmas, is anything going to help you with around the house today, or do you want me to help you with your Christmas decorations? How many, we talk about our neighbors, and we talk about our neighborhood, and we talk about the people that are suburb. When was the last time you knocked on somebody's door? When was the last time you saw someone pull in their drive when you're pulling in the drive and you went next door and say, hey, how was your day today? I hope it was good. I want to tell you about when was the last time you shared with somebody right that lives within 100 yards of you, okay? And the answer, I can tell you what the answer is, hardly ever. We see them when we have cookouts and stuff in the summer, but hardly ever. I'm telling you, get out there and talk to people next door. See what they're doing. And maybe invite people in. If you know somebody, we're all, not all of us, but a lot of us will have Christmas food pretty soon, probably 2 weeks from now, and say, how many people have ever invited for somebody over that they know is alone at Christmas? That doesn't have a neighbor, that had somebody die, that had a spouse die or a friend die. How many are inviting people in that maybe have troops, the son and daughter in the service overseas, they're not there? What about inviting them over? What about writing a letter to one of the troops in this overseas? What about getting involved in sharing beyond ourselves? That is the spirit of the angels. That's the spirit of the Magi. You get beyond yourself.
You can, to move outside yourself, to move beyond yourself, as you're moved along by the Holy Spirit, as you are motivated by the gospel that we hear at Christmas, that God took on human flesh it came into this world taking on human flesh to take on sin, death, and the devil, to conquer it on our behalf. That is what can motivate us to get out and do something for our neighbor.
Yes, if you take a look, I think it's from Colossians. I'm not a very good theologian. I think it's from Colossians, and it talks, I think 2:9, if I'm not mistaken, and it talks about that Christ emptied himself of that to become a human. He emptied himself of everything he had so he could be like us. He basically emptied himself to be like ourselves, to save ourselves. How many of us have emptied ourselves to help some other self? And I think if we follow the gospel example of Jesus, we will focus less on ourselves, less on that elf, and less on fear of failure, and more on helping others. And that, my friend, is exactly what Christmas is all about, because Jesus came to earth for us, in us, by us, through himself, but out of separating himself from what he really had in heaven so he could take care of us. And that's what the message is.
Amen. Amen. Well, Dr. Fiennes, as we wrap up our conversation today, I wish you a blessed Advent. Do you have any special plans coming up over the holidays in the next few weeks?
Unfortunately, I'm going to do it to myself again. We have this Italian sauce we make, and if anybody wants it, I'll send it down. You know, I can't send you this sauce. Thank you so. But I can send you the menu. It's called Sugu sauce. And the family in Italy has been making it since the 11th century, but they lie all the time, so God knows when they restarted it. But anyway, but it's very thick meat sauce. And the newspaper, in fact, 30 years ago did a study of our sauce, and they said it's got meatballs and polenta, and I mean, whatever you got, it's got in it, all kinds of stuff. Great Italian. So we eat on Christmas Eve after services. And it was all fine for the family until the new nutritionist in the newspaper discovered that there's 750 calories per serving, okay? And we usually eat 2 or 3 servings. So that means that after Christmas, we eat about 2,200 calories. That's just wonderful, you know? So, in fact, one time I had I do it a lot. I read in church on Christmas Eve sometimes. And one time I was particularly helpful to myself with this, and I had about 3 or 4 or 5 servings. And, man, I tell you, it was really hard to keep awake in church. We did it. We persevered, you know. But anyway, yes, that's the tradition, and it's starting up again. We're already cooking it, so and I tell you what, there's no elf on the shelf that's going to get my sugu sauce. That's one thing that's not going to happen.
Dr. Jack Fiennes, clinical psychologist, Springfield, Illinois. Thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
God's blessings, everyone. Have a merry, merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too. Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word. Going to study God's Word here with Pastor Whedon on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, celebrating 90 years of telling the good news of Jesus Christ on the airwaves, online, and on demand. Stick around for Thy Strong Word up next.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.